was a great advocate of Haruka Vajrasattva purification practice, which is what we're doing. And back in the day, in Nepal and India, when people got introduced to Buddhism, after they had their feet on the ground and had a solid commitment and so forth, people would go ask Lama what to do, and he'd say, "You need to purify," and people would do this in huge groups, you know, maybe 50 to 100 people at a time. And even right now, probably in McLeod Ganj up above Dharamsala, you know, at Tushita Meditation Center in Dharamsala, you know, they have group retreats for 3 months every summer, usually during the monsoon. So it is a really important practice. So Lama said he once expressed the hope that all his students would make the time to do the retreat at least once before they died. All right. So that's how important it is. And also in the text, they talk a lot about if you're doing your practice and you're not getting any results, what's missing is purification. It's like, you know, our garden, our karmic garden is so choked with weeds that there's no possibility for the good karma can't break through the garbage that we've created. So in a real way, what we're doing when we do this practice sincerely with the right motivation is we're pulling weeds out of the garden today. We're just weeding our garden today so that what's really important and rich and beautiful and helpful, those karmic seeds can ripen. And what are positive karmic seeds ripen as? What we all want. Happiness. And what are negative karmic seeds ripen as? Suffering. Yeah. So, you know, none of us want that. So this is like, you know, Lama Tsongkhapa, after he had done all these years of studying and retreats and da 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 da, and written so many commentaries, he finally took his core students and went in to do, you know, I don't know how long, but I think for years they did purification practice, and it was only then that he had the direct intuitive insight into emptiness. So the purification part is really important. The Buddha had one of his teachings is avoid evil, practice virtue, purify your mind. These are the teachings of the Buddha. Purify your mind. I mean, it comes up again and again, but we don't do it. And we should probably be doing it every night before we go to bed. It doesn't take long to say Om Vajrasattva Humpe 28 times, you know? Doesn't take long. Or 21 times. Okay, so those of you who were at the retreat, I think we had a good crowd at the retreat, and I see some new faces. So, again, the requirement, I'm going to take a minute because I'm already going to the Vajra Hell, so I want to try to help people out. Yeah, I'm already in deep trouble, so I might, you know, that's why they put me in this, doing these retreats. But anyway, so, you know, refuge and bodhicitta, or the understanding of the three principles of the path are crucial. So I'm going to say something about it real quick. And review's not a bad thing. So just pay attention and try to hear these words. So Buddhist refuge is not some mystical thing. It really, Lama Yeshe distills it. You know, when I took refuge back in the day, I was a little nervous about it because anytime you say the word commitment, something, I start shaking a little bit and get a little nervous. I mean, most of us don't like to commit to things, right? So, but this was like, okay, you have an opportunity, Lama said, to commit. He said, you spent your whole life taking refuge in coffee, chocolate, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the stuff that we think of as delicious pretty much is what this culture considers, particularly money, like the God. That's the thing we worship, is all the good stuff, the good life. I want to live my life to the fullest, which usually means getting all that stuff, right? When you sort of, maybe not for everybody, but I think that's what when I hear people and dig a little bit, that's what I hear. But Lana said, so we spent our life taking refuge in externals, and look where it's got us. And maybe most of us probably think our life is working pretty well. But, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, we still are stuck in a process of a cycle of confusion, and we'll never get out of there if we don't wake up to the reality of our existence and put some effort into developing our mind in a positive way. So Lama said, refuge in externals our whole life, but refuge is really, Buddhist refuge is becoming an inner being. There's not even a word for, I think the word for Buddhist in Tibetan is inner being. So, you know very simply put, Buddhist refuge is saying, now my focus is, from now on, I'm committing to being an inner being. I'm not counting on externals. I'm aware of it. I can enjoy external things. There's nothing wrong with having or being or whatever. You know, some things are destructive, true, but we're not saying everything is, you know, we all need to shave our heads and become monastics. But maybe we should. But but, you know, we're taking refuge in our own inner potential for enlightenment, you know, to be happy, to solve our own problems, to become really extraordinary human beings, and then to become a source of inspiration and guidance for others. We all have that potential. So this is what Lama is saying. Refuge is really taking refuge in becoming an inner being. And then we're teaching class on Monday night on refuge. But the key things in refuge are there are three of them. But the first one is dread or fear. What is there to be afraid of? You know. Well, what we need to develop is a healthy awareness of what a mess our mind is. We have no control over our mind. We think we do, but you sit for 5 minutes in meditation, try to focus on your breath, your mind's all over the place. You know, and we have no control over the kinds of delusions and negative states of mind that are going to arise, you know, in our day-to-day life. You know, you see somebody you like, oh, I got to have her, I got to have him, I got to be with this person, or I want this delicious experience, or whatever it is. And then something comes into our, somebody or situation arises that we dislike, we feel aversion, and blah, blah, blah. And we're just like a roll up and down, and around and around. We're out of, our mind is, when we interrogate it, the narrative is pretty not okay, pretty difficult, and doesn't bring us lasting peace and satisfaction. Which is what we want in our heart of hearts. If we think about it, that's what we want. So we need to develop a healthy sense of the word fear, distress, dread, call it what you want to, but being aware of the state of the mind and really wanting to do something about it inside of the awareness that you can do something about it, you know? Third noble truth, truth of cessation. That it's possible to purify our mind completely and to achieve nirvana and even Buddhahood. So the Buddhist teachings is, yeah, your mind's a mess and there's work to be done and you can purify your mind. So understanding it in that context. And then the second thing to be aware of is faith. And it's really faith and the potential for your own personal enlightenment and faith in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and the teachers. So it's basically third and fourth noble truth, the truth of cessation and the truth of the path. And this only comes with time. You cannot sit here in 5 minutes have faith in Buddhism because you haven't done the work. It only comes, and it's a lifelong practice. The more we practice, the more we see what a mess our mind is and how much work we have to do, so we get dread. And then we practice and we see that we're growing and we're happier and less conflicted, and delusions aren't such a problem like they were 5 or 10 years ago. And so we have faith. So dread and faith. And then the third is compassion. And it's not really discussed that much, but from a Mahayana perspective, you know, we have to have compassion for ourselves and also for other beings. If we truly want to help others to stop their suffering and find happiness, then, you know, and we really, you know, compassion is the wish that beings be free from suffering and its causes. You know, we have a lot of work to do on ourselves to be in a position where we can actually help people. Well, sentient beings. I don't want to just pick on people here, but it's all sentient beings. So, so that's the compassion part of it. So refuge entails these three things, and it really is, again, to not to make it sound too mystical or complex, but it's really going simply to, you know, shifting your sources of refuge from stuff out there to your own mind and your potential, and then working on your mind. So it's a commitment to developing yourself inward, your mind, forever and ever, until the end of time, which will be a long time, endless time, actually. So that's refuge. And then I said three principles of the path. So this quickly, this is renunciation, bodhicitta, and emptiness, which in a sentence or two, renunciation is what I was talking about earlier about. It's really about having enough regard and empathy and compassion for yourself to want to stop your suffering. You know, sometimes we call it the determination to be free of what? Suffering. In the context of the realization that it's possible to be free. So, free of what? Suffering. So we really have to know our mind. We have to know that what suffering is and what, or dukkha, or as Geshe Gelug called it, complications. A lot of different words. But, you know, we have to have some aversion for the kind of mind that we have that's uncontrolled, undisciplined, and untrained. And all the misery that acting out of this from a self-centered perspective is going to bring us. We will never, I challenge you, because when I heard this, I went, not me. But I promise you, we have no possibility of satisfaction and lasting happiness and peace as long as our mind is out of control. Impossible. As long as we're driven by self-centered selfishness, impossible. We have no possibility of what we want in our heart of hearts because we're not doing the work to get it. And the Buddha said you can do it. So renunciation is this heartfelt determination to be free of suffering and its causes. And this becomes, and if you don't think you're sick, and the Buddha's saying, hey, you're sick. And get it that you're sick. If we don't think we have an issue, there's no motivation to practice. There's no, you know, if you don't know your mind well enough to get it, that, you know, what a mess it is, because people, when they first start to meditate, they get distressed because they go, oh my gosh, what a mess. But if you haven't even done that kind of work to see what a mess your mind is, that's the first step. And it's actually quite helpful to see that and then to get some strong motivation to be free. Okay, so that's the first one. The second one is bodhicitta, which is this which is based on loving compassion, not sentimentality, but it's based on a real sense of connection with others, all living beings, not just human beings, and not just your friends, but friends, enemies, and strangers, all universal living beings. And again, here's the cool thing about bodhicitta, is it's totally antithetical to our biggest problem, which is selfishness, self-centered selfishness. So bodhicitta is the wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So we want to help others. This is the key. Now most of us aren't at this point. I'm going to say it right now. It's this effortful thing, but it's this wish to help others in every conceivable way, and to help not only give them food, clothing, and shelter, but also teach all beings, you know, how to become happy, and not only just happy, but blissfully happy. And not just blissfully happy, but enlightened, and then they can be of the greatest possible service to all other beings. So, our goal in our heart of hearts is to be able to guide beings from their present state of confusion and whatever that's going on, all the way to supreme happiness. And the method to do that is for us to get our act together, for us to. The practice of six perfections of the Bodhisattva, ethics, generosity, patient endurance and tolerance, enthusiastic perseverance, concentration and wisdom, the six perfections of the Bodhisattva. So, you know, that's how we get there. And the path has been trod for 2,500 years. It's been done. It's laid out. All we have to do is plug in and put the effort there. So that's bodhicitta. It's a wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of others. And then emptiness is the truth of reality. And it's just, very simply put, it's beginning to doubt the truth of our projections. We sit here, you walked into this room tonight, this morning, and you looked around and you saw these people and you said, you made judgments about everything and that you saw, because we just do that instinctively. We don't think about it. We just, I like him, I like the way she looks, I like the way he looks, I like the way this place is a little weird, whatever you said, you know, all of the conversation that comes into our head about what we perceive through all of our senses, we think it's the truth. We're so arrogant because we're driven by an egocentric worldview. I'm the center of the world. The way I see things is the way it is. So it's not a problem, as Robbie has pointed out many times to me, it's not a problem that we project. It's that we believe the projections. We think that the way we see things is the truth. But everybody's having a different experience. And everybody's having, well, this is the truth. Well, who's right? They're just projections. You know, there is, so, you know, Lama Yeshe used to say, emptiness is a glorified paint job. It's like stripping away our projections and seeing things directly. You know, seeing things as they are, and you know, free of our projections. And some people think, well, that means everything disappears and nothing exists, and so I can do what I want to do because it doesn't matter. It's, you know, the blah, blah, blah. That's completely wrong. That is completely wrong. Here's where this ties into all that we're talking about today, the purification practice. Because things are empty of having any objective, intrinsic, inherent existence out there, in their own, you know, nothing exists the way it appears. We have to get that. We have at least to be open or creatively aligned with that, you know, and then, so that it's as if we're in a movie theater and our mind is the projector in the movie theater, and we're projecting our life on a screen, and we're so caught up in the movie that we have a lot of emotional ups and downs. But when we realize that we're just projecting, and that what's showing up is not the truth, but just our projections, that's incredibly powerful and freeing for us. And then here's the key. Why, you know, if you're seeing your life, if we're seeing our lives as happy, we're peaceful, we have good friends, you know, things are going well for us internally, our mind is in a good place, and externally, probably in a good place too. Where's that coming from? That's coming from our karma. The results of positive karma is to literally be forced to see ourselves as happy. Yeah, we're projecting a good life, a happy life. If we're seeing ourselves stressed out, depressed, no friends, creating problems for ourselves and other people because of our wild, crazy minds, you know, and never finding any sort of lasting peace and happiness. Where's that coming from? What caused the projector to do that? That's negative karma. Negative karma ripens in suffering and its causes. It ripens. We are forced to see ourselves as suffering because of the ripening of negative karma. Right this minute, billions of karmic seeds ripen this morning for you to wake up and not, you know, you could be in the next realm in 5 minutes, right? So much good karma is ripening for you to wake up, be a human being, come to Kadampa Center, purify. So much good karma, right? And there's plenty of negative karma. There's plenty of negative karma to work with. We don't have to fret about that. So normally when we do these practices, I should have written this on the board, but I ask people to, at least if you can't remember anything, and it's very good to try to bring up stuff that you've done that's not healthy and has been harmful. But, excuse me, a good tip-off is the 10 non-virtuous actions. So killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous talk, greed, hatred, ignorance, pride, jealousy, and 84,000 other delusions of the mind. So, you know, we're going to be working with the body and the speech and the mind. And these are the, you know, general categories, but you can fill in the details with your experiences in your life that you want to let go of. We all have memories, or at least I do, you know, when, you know, you remember something, you kind of twitch a little bit because the charge of whatever you did that was harmful still is eating at your mind at some level. And we need to work with those kinds of memories as well. And if you get into something that you don't want to go into, you know, you just don't go there. You know, you may not be ready to work with everything, but you work with what you can. Okay? So that's refuge and the three principles. So everybody's up to speed. And those of you who haven't taken refuge just try to do the best you can, and don't make any judgments about the Dharma based on today, at least negative ones. Okay, so let's do the we'll start out with the power of taking refuge in the sadhana. Actually, let's start out with three prostrations. That's a good way to stretch, and then also to arrogant and negative. You can imagine that as you touch your head to the ground, that you're dumping out. We're just dumping out all of our preconceptions and stuff like that that are going to get in the way of us having a valuable time today. Om namo manjusriye, namo susriye, namo tamasriye soa. Oh, Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye, Soma. Oh, Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamashriye, Soma. Jill brought her bell. And when we do the very last recitation of the mantra, we'll ring the bell, and then we'll finish reading the sadhana. So the recitation will go as long as it goes. Okay. Again, remember, before you say the refuge formula, remember, you know, dread, you know, sense of aversion for the kind of mind you have and wanting to do something about that, and then faith, you know, remembering the third and fourth noble truth, that it is possible to purify our mind, achieve nirvana, and there's a path to do that, and we have teachers that, and they inspire us. So that plus compassion. I forever take refuge in Buddha and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the Dhaka, the mantra yoga, in the heroes, heroines, gods and goddesses, and in the bodhisattvas of him. But most of all, I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the Dhakas and the Tri Yoga, in the heroes and heroines of the Ten Boom. But most of all, forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, my holy guru forever. And before we launch into the different parts of the actual practice, I want you to visualize on your right side is your father and the left is your mother. Your enemy and sentient beings who agitate you are in front of you. The people you're attached to are seated behind you. And you're surrounded by universal in human form. And just take much to settle your mind and... If you want to do, you know, Geshe-la's taught the nine-round breathing many times. You can pick whatever practice you find helpful. It could be just mindfulness of the breath, counting the breath to 21, nine-round breathing, whatever works for you best, just do that for a moment. First, recall the definition of negative karma. Any action that results in suffering, usually an action motivated by ignorance, attachment, or aversion. So we're going to read this part together, this next stanza. Almost every action I do, 24 hours a day, is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death in this life, and has been like that from beginningless rebirths. Nearly every action I have ever created has been non-virtuous, the cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I've been breaking my pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric vows. Worst of all, I've created the heaviest of negative karma in relation to my virtuous friends, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts toward them, harming their holy body, disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I had swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. In this way, generate strong feelings of urgency and regret. So take a moment and try to think of some specific things, actions of body, speech, and mind, that you want to let go of. You want to take the charge. We're not talking about wiping your memory free. You know, it's probably important not to forget things that you've done that are unskillful, but you know, so you don't do them again. But the negative charge with it, that's what we want to let go of. And also, you might say, well, I've never killed anybody or anything in this lifetime. But this practice is not only purifying the negative karma of this life, but countless previous lifetimes. So in every lifetime, in previous lifetimes, we've done all these things. Killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous talk, greed, hatred, ignorance. All of these negative, called 10 non-virtues. We've done them so many times. So we don't have to think I'm so pure. I haven't done this or that. Just think, you know, just try to work with whatever comes up, but recognizing that your garden is choked with these negative seeds and weeds, and this is what we need to pull up by doing this practice. So bring to mind, like, do a meditation, a contemplative meditation on the things that you want to let go of. We'll read this together on remembering impermanence and death. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but the time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma, they would be in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to be able to purify my negative karma right now without even a second's delay for practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So the teachings say it's important to remember impermanence and death all the time. At the beginning of the practice, so we'll do it with a strong intention. In the middle of the practice, so we'll do it well and have some intention to complete it. And at the end of the practice, so we'll dedicate it and finish the practice off well. So remembering that our life could end at any moment, and it's so precious. It's just, you might be younger, but you could be killed on the way home. It doesn't matter how old we are. Time is now time. This is our only time. You know, Lama Zopa says we should wake up every morning and say, today I'm going to die. Like, this is the last day of our life. Today I'm going to die. So precious. Changing moment to moment to moment. Let's use those moments skillfully. Not waste the precious moments of this short life that we have. Really short life. Very precious, because of what we can do with it, because we can achieve extraordinarily helpful states of mind for us and for others. So it's so precious that way. Now the next is power of dependence, generating bodhicitta. But I read this together. But I'm not practicing the Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, asuras, intermediate state beings, all the suffering and its causes, and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must practice all my purify my negative karma immediately. Recitation. So, as we were saying earlier, you know, this bodhicitta, bodhi means awakening, citta means mind, this awakening mind. This is the key to the Mahayana practice. It's like the heart and soul of Mahayana Buddhism. And it's antithetical to everything that all of our instincts are, I'm the center of the universe, I'm the most important one. I mean, we project a false sense of I, and we believe in it, and we cling to it, and that's who we are. And creates enormous number of problems for ourselves. Bodhicitta is antithetical. It's the worst enemy of self-cherishing. Egocentricity. It's egocentricity's worst enemy, because we're dedicating our entire existence to achieve enlightenment for the sake of others. Not, and we're part of this equation, of course, but you know, the motivation is others. I must help others. How do I do that? Practice the path, get my act together. Purify my mind, develop positive habits, make good choices, create good karma, the cause of happiness. That's bodhicitta. For this practice, if you don't have that motivation, you might end up, I'm not joking, like Darth Vader. If you have that motivation, you could actually end up like a saint, a Buddha, a bodhisattva. It completely depends upon your intention, your motivation for practice. So important. Now, this is the visualization. So I'm not going to, it's pretty self-explanatory. As I said earlier, some people are new here. The image of the that we're using above the crown of the head is the one in the front of the sadhana, bodhisattva. It's Vajrasattva with consort, and it's a symbolic representation of the union of bliss and wisdom. You can think of it like that. And we're creating this image, this visualization above our head in order to purify our mind. It's not separate from our mind. In fact, as I said, in the retreat, this is where it's so helpful to have a guru, a really qualified master, as, someone that you have that heartfelt link to. And if it could be the Dalai Lama. If you've never met the Dalai Lama, but but his teachings resonate with you, you could visualize him too. But you want to see Vajrasattva, who's basically being created by your own mind, as inseparable from your guru. So your mind, Vajrasattva's mind, and your guru's mind are inseparably one. This is really important. All right. Out of the void, 6 inches above the crown of my head, appears the seed syllable PAM. So 6 inches above the head, PAM, PAM, which HUM, you can just leave it there, it's fine. In the center of the moon disk is the seed syllable HUM. So HUM. Suddenly, the HUM transforms into a white 5-pronged Vajra with HUM in its center. So this is a gold 5-pronged Vajra, but HUM, you would visualize this. And all of this is made of light, like a hologram, okay? But HUM is right here at the center of this Vajra, which is sitting on a lotus and a moon disc above the crown of her head. Okay, so we transform the HUM into a 5-palm Vajra marked by HUM. Much light radiates from both the HUM and the Vajra, going out into the 10 directions, completing the 2 purposes. It's offering great psychic, blissful energy to all the Buddhists and Bodhisattvas. So the energy from the HUM and the Vajra going out into space around us, offering this psychic, blissful energy to the gurus and bodhisattvas, and is purifying the defilements of all sentient beings who are surrounding us, right? So this light's going out, purifying everyone and making these blissful offerings to the Buddhas and bodhisattvas. The whole universe then melts into light. And this light returns and is absorbed into the HUM and the Vajra. And the HUM and the Vajra melt into light and transform into Vajrasattva. So instantly. So all of this amazing energy that is coming in and sort of turning our HUM and Vajra into this, sort of source of the, and it instantly transforms into Vajrasattva, sort of in an instant. Now, the visualization of Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva is white. He has one face and 2 arms, sitting in the full lotus position. He holds his right hand at his heart. He holds a vajra in his right hand at his heart. So like this. And a bell in his left rests in his lap. So like this. This is how he's sitting, basically. His consort, Dorji Naima Karmo, embraces him, her legs encircling his body. She too is white and has one face and two arms. She holds a curved knife in the right hand and a skull cup in her left. Now all of these descriptions, the curved knife, the skull cup, everything has symbolic meaning, so it's not literal. Just in the same way that the couple sitting in sexual union, it's not literal. They're both dressed in robes of heavenly silk and adorned by precious jewel ornaments. They both have an om at their crown chakra, so here, an ah at their throat, and a hum at their heart chakra. At the center of the moon disk, at their divine hearts, stands the seed syllable hum, encircled by the 100-syllable mantra, standing counterclockwise around the edge of the moon disk. So both Vajrasattva and consort above the head, with Om Mahom, but at the hum is actually sitting on a moon disk at their hearts. And around the edge of the moon disk, standing counterclockwise, I guess that's this way, are the syllables of the 100-syllable mantra. And as we say the syllables of the mantra, each syllable lights up, and light and nectar come from that syllable. And it's just pouring down like a fire hose down their respective central channels. So I'm going to read the prayer of the opponent powers of regret. Through ignorance and delusion, I have broken and damaged my pledges. Holy Guru, who has the power to liberate me, my inner master, holder of the Vajra, whose essence is great compassion, Lord of all migratory beings, to you I go for refuge. O Bhagwan Vajrasattva, destroyer of all defilements, who has attained all realizations and has passed to the other shore, I request you to please purify all negativities and broken and damaged pledges of myself and other sentient beings. And this is the power. So far we've done like two of the powers, haven't we? We've done the power of reliance. We've relied on Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and compassion. And we've done, this is the power of regret. We're saying, I really regret that I've done these things. Now, this is the power of the remedy. This is the visualization for the power of the remedy. Because of this request, brilliant light radiates from the mantra rosary and the hum at the divine heart of Vajrasattva. The light purifies all negativities and obscurations of all sentient beings and becomes an offering to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Let me say that again. Because of this request, brilliant light radiates from the hum and the mantra at the divine heart. So light's going out from the mantra and the hum at the divine heart, Vajrasattva. It purifies all the negativities and obscurations of all sentient beings that are surrounding us. So you can imagine that instantly they've all been purified. And this becomes an offering to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. The essence of the perfect qualities of their holy body, speech, and mind, and all their transcendental wisdom returns in the form of light that sinks into the hum and the mantra rosary at Vajrasattva's heart. So again, we're expanding, we're sending this light out to purify sentient beings, make offerings to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and then the light's coming back to the hum and the mantra rosary at Vajrasattva's heart, and like supercharging these seed syllables and this mantra. And now the light and nectar began to come down. So from the hum and the mantra rosary, a stream of blissful white Amrita energy begins to flow down through the central channel of the divine couple. The Amrita flows out through their secret chakras in union and flows into me through my crown chakra. Flowing down through my central channel, this stream of transcendental wisdom, Amrita energy, fills my whole body, destroying all negativities and defilements of my body, speech, and mind. So now is when we do the recitation. So that's the visualization. So you got the visualization, Vajrasattva, you've got Lotus, Moon Disk, Vajrasattva, Father and Mother, Hum, Moon Disk, with a hum at the center, mantra rosary around it, counterclockwise, and torrents of nectar. This is light energy, completely like a hologram, coming down through their central channel, through their joined organs, and coming in the crown of our head and completely purifying us. So the first visualization I described earlier is the purifying the body. So we'll do this. I'm looking at the time. I don't want to go too long. We're just going to do maybe. We'll do a few of each of the visualizations. So those of you who don't know the long mantra, you just do Om Vajrasattva Humpe and imagine that those syllables are around the edge of the mantra. If you know the long mantra, do that. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapaya Vajrasattva When you say a mantra, you should say every syllable, but the person, and you enunciate every syllable, but the person next to you should not be able to hear you. So you want to be clear about that. Sit up straight. Do not fidget. Be perfectly still. Be mindful of your body, speech, and mind. 100% mindful of everything that's going on, including this dynamic visualization. Now we're going to change the visualization to purifying the speech as the light and nectar fill our body and the garbage, the negative karmic imprints, seeds of our of negativities of speech, lying, slander, harsh, and frivolous speech, all rise up and exit as, you know, go through the different orifices in the head as we recite the mantra again. Thank you. Now we're going to change the visualization to the mind. Again, as the light and nectar enter the crown of our head, instantly, like a light going on in a dark room, our body completely filled with blissful white light, purifying all the negative karma of mind. Om Bhadrasapasamaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapatina Patita Dhirame Bhava Sutakaya Me Bhava Supakaya Me Bhava Anarate Me Bhava Sava Siddhi Me Payaja Sava Kama Sucha Me Chidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Sava Tathagata Bhadrama Me Mucha Bhadra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe. Together, generating faith and having been purified. From the crown of my head, Guru Bhadrasapa says, Son of the race, your negativities and obscurations and broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. You want to generate strong faith that you've been completely purified, just as Guru Bhadrasapa said. This is so important. I cannot tell you how important it is. You have to have faith in this practice and the four opponent powers, and that you just did something. You just did something amazing to purify, you know, so much negative karma, and feel that you've actually done something positive. Important to have, you know, some sincere faith in the practice. Now, this is the power from refraining from creating negative karmas again. So this is actually the fourth opponent power, right? Restraint. Sometimes we call it the power of restraint. And it's crucial, because if you don't, this is like you're promising to not do it again for a second, a minute, an hour, a day, a lifetime, whatever you can commit to. But this is really important to seal the practice. Before Guru Bhadrasapa, I vow never again to commit these negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds those negative actions which I find difficult to abstain. Guru Bhadrasapa is extremely pleased with your pledge. So imagine Bhadrasapa with his father and mother very pleased that you've made this vow not to do this again. And you melt into light and dissolve into you. And your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Bhadrasapa's holy body, speech, and mind. So you imagine that they're melting into you. You don't visualize yourself as Vajrasattva, but you think, I'm pure. My body, speech, and mind are pure, just as Guru Vajrasattva's body, speech, and mind are pure. In emptiness, there is no I, creative negative karma. There is no action of creating negative karma. There is no negative karma created. Place your mind in that emptiness for a little while. And this way, look at all phenomena as empty. They do exist, but not from their own side. With this awareness of emptiness, we'll dedicate the merits. So meditate for a moment on emptiness. So this is a crucial part, because this is the way to really wipe the slate clean of these negative imprints, is to have an awareness, and more than just an awareness, but an insight, a direct insight into the truth of emptiness. So understanding that our mind is literally hallucinating our reality based on past karmic imprints. And then we believe it. And then we act out of it, thinking that our view is the truth. And getting caught in greed and attachment and clinging and fear and hatred and all kinds of aversion. All the stuff that makes us miserable all comes from this fundamental error. It's like the taproot for all of our suffering. We cut this, everything, all the suffering disappears, and what manifests is our true nature, which is compassion, wisdom, and all the positive qualities. That's our nature. And these qualities can be cultivated. So meditate on emptiness to whatever degree you understand it. Nothing exists independent of our mind labeling it. Nothing exists independent of our mind projecting. There's no objective reality out there independent of my mind creating it. If I want my mind to project happiness, I have to create positive karma and purify negative karma. If I want to stop suffering, I have to purify negative karma. We have to purify. We have no choice if we want to be happy. Now we'll do the merit, dedicating the merits. Due to all the merits of the three times Kovic, Mami, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all the sentient beings, which appear to be real from here, which are empty, may I, which appears to be real but is empty, give Bodhisattvas enlightenment, which appears to be real but is empty, and lead all sentient beings who appear to be real but are totally empty, to that enlightenment which appears to be real but is empty, by myself alone, which appears to be real but is also totally empty, non-existent from there. May the precious Bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success, myself and other sentient beings, be generated with my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without a second's delay. And may that which has been generated be increased. May I and all sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru in all our lifetimes, never be separated for even a second from the pure path greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas, and actualize the complete path, three principal paths, the two stages of highest yoga, Tantra, the root of which is guru devotion, within our minds as quickly as possible. Just as the brave Manjushri Samantabhadra realized things as they are and dedicate all these virtues in the best way, then I may follow after them. Whatever dedication of the three times victorious ones gone to bliss have admired as best, in the same way, also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may become good works. So we'll take, it's 10:44, so we'll take a 15-minute break, silent break, and this will be an opportunity for people to leave if they're inclined. Be sure and dedicate merit if you do leave. But we'll start back at 11 o'clock. We'll do one more session from 11 to 12. Comment about, and this is a book that I just saw outside from Lamayashi Wisdom Archive, but it's Lama Zopa's teaching on seeing the guru as the Buddha. Remember I told you it's really important, and this is unique. It's part of the Lama Ram teachings, but it's really unique in Tantra. It's emphasized in Tantra way more than it is in the Sutra path and the esoteric teachings of the Dharma. Vajrayana, Tantra, same thing. Like when you that you see Vajrasattva as inseparable from your guru. Vajrasattva's a Buddha. We think of the Vajrasattva as being fully enlightened. Being this visualization. And by the way, visualization is not meant to be like static and dead. Like the statues here, they're not moving, but it's meant to be an enlightened presence. Like when you visualize it, and then we do all of these different things to sort of build it up and energize it and make us have some sense of Vajrasattva above the crown of our head. And as much as you can, you want to feel that there's an enlightened presence. This is not just some hologram, but it's almost as if Vajrasattva, Father and Mother, are living and breathing, and they're, symbolic of all three objects of refuge and experiencing bliss, and in their mind is inseparable from emptiness, and that Vajrasattva, Father and Mother, are inseparable from our guru, our teacher. And as Lama Zopa said, having that faith, call it devotion, we use the word devotion, reliance. Without that, the Dharma is like eating crackers without any, it's just dry. There's no moisture there. There's no juice. It doesn't work. It's like beating our head against the wall. We have to have that connection with the guru to bring these practices to life. And if you don't have a guru, then you can, like I said, envision Lama, the Dalai Lama or whoever, the historical Buddha. But it's really helpful to have that kind of connection. I think, I can't emphasize it enough, even though it's talked about and the commentary on this practice and other practices, it's really important. Again, recollecting dread and faith and compassion. And then we'll do these, the power of dependence. Remember, this is the four opponent powers. Again, they call it dependence, but sometimes we say reliance, the power of reliance. Then we say the power of regret. So we bring to mind things that we regret. Then the power of the remedy, which is we do the Vajra, we do the 100-syllable mantra with the visualization, and then the power of resolve, which is the promise not to do it again, some period of time. So all four opponent powers are covered in this practice. This is the power of the reliance or dependence. I forever take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, in the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. I forever take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I take refuge in all the three vehicles, in the dakas and dakinis of secret mantra yoga, in the heroes and heroines, the gods and goddesses, and the bodhisattvas of the ten bhumis, but most of all I take refuge in my holy guru forever. First, recall the definition of negative karma, any action that results in suffering, usually an action motivated by ignorance, attachment, and aversion. So this is important to pay attention. How do we know if an action is non-virtue? Because the long-term consequences of that action are suffering. You know, you might get all charged up about robbing a bank or killing a little animal or whatever. You might think, oh, that's a good thing. That made, felt good to do this, but the long-term consequences will be suffering. So that's the definition of non-virtue. And actions motivated by ignorance, attachment, and aversion always, always lead to suffering unless they're purified. Now we'll read together. Almost every action I do 24 hours a day is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death in this life and has been like that from beginningless rebirths. Nearly every action I've ever created has been non-virtuous, cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously I've also been breaking my Pratimoksha, Bodhisattva, and Tantric vows. Worst of all, I've created the heads of negative karma in relation to my virtuous friends, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, holding non-devotional thoughts toward them, harming their holy body, and disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I've swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. And this generates strong feelings of urgency and regret. And we'll go to remembering death and impermanence. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but his time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be reborn in the lower realms. Because I have not practiced Dharma, I would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to be able to purify my negative karma right now without even a second's delay. Practice of the Bodhisattva's meditation recitation. And we're going to do an analytical meditation on generating bodhicitta. And I'm going to do the... There are two main methods to do this. One is called the six cause and one effect, or sometimes called the seven-point instruction on cause and effect. And the other one is called equalizing and exchanging self with others. We're going to do the latter one, and that one was taught by Shantideva. Sometimes we combine the two into a longer meditation, but we don't have all day today, so we're going to do this one. And I'm actually reading these points from this book, which is quite good, Thupten Chodron's Guided Meditations on the Stage of the Path. So the first step, the first contemplation, is equalizing self and others. We train ourselves to look beyond superficial differences and recognize that we and others are the same in wanting to be happy and free of pain. We're all the same in wanting to be happy and free of pain. And somebody, one of the ways to do this, just saying those words may not, see, what we're trying to generate here is a feeling for the words, not just to say the words, but actually get how profound this is. When we look around the room, and when we walk out of this room today, and we're standing at the grocery checkout counter, and we're looking at the people in front and behind us, and the person checking us out, we know something so intimate about everybody that everybody wants 24/7, wants to be happy, and doesn't want to suffer. We're all equally intent on finding lasting happiness and avoiding suffering. We're equal in that important way. You know, so you say, she wants that to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. He wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. You can just remind yourself as you see people today that everybody wants the same thing equally. The disadvantages of self-centeredness. Instead of feeling guilty because we're selfish, we recognize that although the self-centered attitude pretends to look like it's looking out for our welfare, in fact, it deceives us and underlies all conflict and pain. So it looks like a self-centeredness, looks like our friend, like it's pretending to look out for our welfare, but in fact, it deceives us and underlies all conflict and pain. Check it out. Is self-centered selfishness our friend? Or is it the devil that lives in our heart that destroys all of our peace and happiness and all our potential for happiness and peace? So to gain some conviction, it's good to look at the things that we do and see if self-centered selfishness is really there. And if we, again, with just simple practice, looking at the 10 non-virtuous actions, killing and stealing and adultery, the three of body that we think about, and the four of speech, lying, slander, harsh, frivolous talk. Greed, attachment, desire, and all that entails, hatred, aversion, ignorance, fear, jealousy, pride, these delusions in these of mind and these actions of body and speech are created or the creation of self-centered selfishness, which then plants the karmic seed for suffering every time. So we say all the suffering of all living beings, all the wars, all the relationship problems, all the diseases, all the premature deaths, all the depression, anxiety, fear, jealousy, you name it. Everything in the whole, throughout all space and time, all the suffering of all sentient beings is the product of one mistake. It's this projection of a false sense of I. You know, we say, my body, my mind, like there's some owner of our body and mind. We project a false sense of I. We believe in it, like that's who I am. And then we cling to it as the truth. I am the most important one. I am the center of the universe. I. I want this. I hate that. I don't care about this. I'm indifferent about that. It's the problem. We have to get a really strong sense that our self-centered selfishness is not our friend. Our true friend is the attitude that cherishes others and looking at the advantages of cherishing others. We learn to cherish others sincerely by recognizing that this attitude is the source of all our own and others' happiness. totally antithetical to self-cherishing, isn't it? Cherishing others. This is very different from pleasing others because we want them to like or approve of us. This is an attitude of cherishing others. So if we truly, in a heart of hearts, cherished others, again, looking at the 10 non-virtues, you know, if we cherished others, we wouldn't kill them. We would, in fact, save lives. We wouldn't steal. We would, in fact, practice generosity toward others because we cherish them. We wouldn't commit adultery, but we'd be aware of others' feelings and be respectful of that. We wouldn't lie. We'd be truthful if we cherished others. We wouldn't slander or badmouth others. We'd either keep our mouth shut or we'd praise them. At least everybody is swimming in good qualities, but we want to focus on the negative when we're motivated by self-cherishing. Praising others, if we cherished others, we'd praise their good qualities. We'd point them out. Harsh speech would be replaced by harmonious speech, and gossip, and meaningless speech by speaking in a more skillful way, avoiding gossip. And then greed. If we cherished others, we wouldn't practice, and you have to think about this one a little bit, but cherishing others, could be an antidote to the delusion of greed. By letting go of attachment, just appreciating others, and hatred, by cherishing others, we wouldn't be swept away by this delusion. We'd let go of it. Practicing compassion and ignorance, closed-minded ignorance. By cherishing others, we'd again, this is a little hard to talk about, but there's, it would serve as an antidote to our principal delusion, which is self-cherishing. Cherishing a false sense of I. So now we, for happiness, cherish others. For suffering, cherish yourself with a selfish mind. We don't want that. For happiness, cherish others. Exchanging self for others is the next contemplation. Seeing that selfishly caring only for ourselves causes us constant unhappiness and frustration, and cherishing others brings only benefit and happiness to ourselves and others. We practice shifting the primary object of our care from ourselves to others. So this is a mental shift in how we think. It's not like I'm exchanging me for you, but it's I'm exchanging self-cherishing for the attitude of cherishing others. Shifting the primary object of our care from ourselves to others. Mama Yeshe used to say over and over again, as much as I can, I dedicate my life to others. Which is kind of another way of saying this, isn't it? As much as we can, we dedicate our life to others. We hear meditating and thinking about these, contemplating these truths in order to better help others. You know, we eat and take care of our body and our mind for others. So we shift the focus from self-centeredness to others. Completely opposite of our instinct. But this is a way we need to train our mind. And we practice, the next step is practice what many of you know as Tonglin, taking and giving. We train gladly, taking the suffering of others that they don't want and using it to destroy what we don't want, our own ignorance and self-centeredness. We also practice joyfully transforming our own bodily possessions and positive potential so that they become whatever others need and give them to others with delight, free of hesitation and modularness. So Tonglin, we're taking on, you know, the visualization for this practice is like we visualize that we take on the suffering of others in the form of like black smoke. We can start out visualizing yourself, but then you can work with close members and then eventually with people that you feel aversion toward, and then the infinite faceless people that you feel indifference towards. But you can imagine that their suffering is a form of black smoke, you know, that somebody may be dealing, you know, you may be dealing with some strong issues. Now you imagine that you, in front, you know, you visualize yourself in front and this negativity is in the form of black smoke, and gradually, it doesn't have to be one breath, but it could be many breaths, you breathe this negativity in through your nostrils and it goes down to your heart and it destroys your self-cherishing selfishness, which is the last thing egocentricity wants, is to take on somebody else's problems. We're so preoccupied with ourself, we don't want to take on others' problems, but this is the antidote to that. So we're using compassion, the action of taking on others' suffering, and destroying our self-cherishing. And then we visualize our minds liberated by that. And then we visualize white light coming out and gradually going to this other being and giving them what they want and need, temporal and ultimate happiness. And so we practice. So that's the action of love, giving beings what they, you know, wanting beings to be happy and have the causes of happiness. That's the definition of love. We're practicing love when we give away, when we give to beings what they want and need, and when we take on their suffering, that's the action of compassion. You know, freeing beings from suffering. May beings be free of suffering and their causes. That's the definition of compassion. So this is the action of compassion. So compassion, taking on the suffering, loving kindness, giving them happiness and its causes. So we just do this practice for a few minutes, get a taste of it. And the last meditation is the altruistic intention, the primary intention for everything we do to become a fully enlightened Buddha in order to be of the most effective benefit to others. So this is bodhicitta motivation. Primary intention for everything we do to become a fully enlightened Buddha in order to be of most effective benefit to others. So may doing this Vajrasattva purification practice further us along our path to become a Buddha in order to be of most effective benefit to others. Now we'll read the power of dependence in the text. Generating bodhicitta. But I'm not practicing this Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, those hungry, asuras, intermediate state beings, from all their suffering and its causes, and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all my negative karma immediately by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. So again, remind yourself that your mom is on your left, your dad's on the right. Even if they're deceased, you visualize them here with you, the people that we feel negativity and aversion toward are in front of us, and behind us are all the beings that we're attached to, and we're surrounded by universal living beings, humans, animals, and even beings in realms that we can't see. We're surrounded by all these beings. Out of the void, about 6 inches above the crown of my head, appears the seed syllable Pam, which transforms into a 1,000-petal lotus. On top of the lotus appears the seed syllable Ah, which transforms into a moon disk. In the center of the moon disk stands the seed syllable Hum. Suddenly, the Hum transforms into a white, five-pronged Vajra with Hum at its center. Much radiant light emanates from both the Hum and the Vajra, going out in the 10 directions, completing the 2 purposes. Those are offering great psychic blissful energy to all the gurus and Buddhas, and purifying the defilements of all sentient beings. The whole universe melts into light. This light then returns and is absorbed by the Hum and the Vajra. The Hum and the Vajra also melt into light and transform into Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva is white. He has one face and 2 arms. Sitting in the full lotus position, he holds a Vajra in his right hand at his heart and a bell in his left, which rests in his lap. His consort, Dorji Nimakarmo, embraces him, her legs encircling his body. She too is white and has one face and 2 arms. She holds a curved knife in her right hand and a skull cup in her left. They're both dressed in robes of heavenly silk and adorned by precious jewel ornaments. They both have seed syllables Om at their crown chakra. Ah at their throat chakra, and Hum at their heart. At the center of the moon disk at their heart, at the divine at their divine heart stands the seed syllable Hum, encircled by the hundred syllable mantra, standing counterclockwise around the edge of the moon disk. Through ignorance and delusion, I have broken and damaged my pledges. Holy Guru, who has the power to liberate me. So we're actually speaking to Bhadrasattva. This is our statement of regret. Holy Guru has the power to liberate me, my inner master, holder of the Vajra, whose essence is great compassion. Lord of all migratory beings, to you I take refuge. O Bhagavan Bhadrasattva, destroyer of all defilements, who has attained all realizations and has passed to the other shore, I request you to please purify all negativities and broken and damaged pledges of myself and other sentient beings. So again, this is once again the power of regret. So we've done the power of reliance, the power of regret. Now comes the power of the remedy, which is the actual visualization and recitation of the hundred syllable mantra. Because of this request, brilliant light radiates from the mantra rosary and the Hum of the divine heart of Vajrasattva. The light purifies all negativities and obscurations of all sentient beings. So that light going out from Vajrasattva, purifying all the negativities of all sentient beings, becomes an offering for all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. The essence of the perfect qualities of their holy body, speech, and mind, all their transcendental knowledge, wisdom, returns in the form of light that sinks into the Hum and the mantra rosary at Vajrasattva's divine heart. From the Hum and the mantra rosary, a stream of blissful white Amrita energy flows down through the central channel of the divine couple. This Amrita flows out through their secret chakras in union and flows into me through my crown chakra. Flowing down through my central channel, this stream of transcendental wisdom Amrita energy fills my whole body, destroying all negativities and defilements of my body, speech, and mind. These are completely purified. So we'll start out doing the visualization of the downward, the nectar coming in, purifying negativities of our body. And, you know, the principal three that we talk about are killing and stealing and adultery, which is basically harmful sexual relations that harm ourselves, harm others. Thank you. change of visualization to purifying the speech. Again, where the nectar fills us up from the bottom up, and then the negativities of speech and negative karmic seeds, you know, go out through the orifices in our head and the crown chakra. And we feel like we're purifying, lying, slander, harsh and frivolous speech, which we've done not only in this life, but lifetime, but countless other lifetimes. Now we change the visualization to purifying the mind, light and nectar coming from Guru Vajrasattva and Mother, entering the crown of our head and completely completely purifying all the negativities of mental negative karma, greed, hatred, ignorance, pride, jealousy, and all the rest, fear. Anything that disturbs your mind and has, you know, for countless eons. We want to purify those negative seeds. Now we're going to do it, the visualization, one more time, but it's going to be all three visualizations simultaneously. We're going to recite the mantra, 100-syllable mantra, together 21 times. And the visualization is that everything's happening at one time. The nectar's coming, you know, pushing all the negativity of body downward. The negativity of speech is coming up and disappearing. And then the body's completely being filled with light to purify the subtle obscurations of body, speech, and mind that prevent us from achieving full enlightenment. So we'll do this together. Somebody who knows the tune, Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manupalaya Vajrasattva Dinapa Hidomi Ramay Bawa Sutokayo Mebawa Supokayo Mebawa Anarata Mebawa Sarvasiddhi Meprayacha. Kamasuchami Itsidam Sriam Kuraham Ha 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 ho Bhagavan Sawatata Kadra Badramame Mutra Badramama Mahasamaya Safa Ahom Pe Om Badrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Badrasapa Dinapa Tito Mimame Bawa Sutokaya. Things who appear to be real, but also totally empty. For that enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, by myself alone, which appears to be real, but is also totally empty, non-existent from there. May the precious bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success for myself, sentient beings, be generated with my own mind and in the minds of all other sentient beings, not even a second's delay. And may that which has been generated be increased. May I and all other sentient beings have Lama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru and all our lifetimes never be separated for even a second from the pure path as greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas and actualize the complete path, the three principal paths, the two stages of highest yoga tantra, the root of which is guru devotion within our minds as quickly as possible. Just as the brave Manjushri and Samantra Bhadra realize things as they are, I dedicate all these virtues in the best way that I may follow after them. Whatever dedication of the three times victorious ones gone to bliss have admired is best, in the same way I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue that I may perform good works. Alright, 246. May all beings everywhere, plagued by the sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid with a mind weighed down by oppression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may these never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and the bosom be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. I did the long life prayers on 244. And, 244 and 245. In this land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chinrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Then we'll do long life for Ken Rinpoche. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornaments of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And then we'll do seven of the Tara mantras for Geshe Gelug's long life. Tari tu re so ha om 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 tari tu tari tu re so ha. Om tari tu tari tu re so ha. Om tari tu tari tu re so ha.